questions and answers. Okay, on to the next talk. Elisabeth Nikranz and Tilman Herbrich from Spirit Legal are going to tell us something about how privacy data protection can be pursued in the courts. So give the two a warm applause. The stage is yours. Yeah, a warm welcome. We are Tilman and Elisabeth from Spirit Legal, a law firm, and we're happy that you've all shown up to hear our talk, how to enforce data protection through the courts. We are lawyers both, and first we advise many companies in data privacy, data protection law, which is a special subject, and luckily we also advise a few institutions, NGOs, organizations, and represent them in the courts. And we would like to tell you something about our practice. I'm showing you the structure of the talk. First of all, we're going to talk about the very wide gap between the law, the right, and reality. We'll look at the reasons for that, and we will see how what you as an affected person could do, or as an organization, how that goes in detail. And we're going to talk about the currently changing options for collective law enforcement. Okay, and with that, we'll start. The law versus the reality, privacy litigation, the right for the person to have their privacy protected with the courts is a recent thing. Since the 1970s, we have data protection laws, but before the GDPR, which came into force in 2018, it was very hard to enforce these rights. With the GDPR, we have authorities, we have fines, and not just in the GDPR, also in the Charter of Basic Rights of the European Union, the protection of basic rights is given high importance, and the current commercial use of data, which is ubiquitous, is in stark contrast to that, which particularly refers to online tracking. I brought you an example. This is a research by Ingo Dachwitz of netzpolitik.org, who looked at a certain problem in detail and shows the problems. Our surf behavior, as we probably all know, is tracked quite comprehensively. We are put into categories. And some companies even measure us in psychrometric terms, and on the basis of this data, and with personalized, we receive personalized ads. And the question there is, why do we have these laws if that is what reality looks like? And the thing is that data protection isn't just the protection for the individual, but also it's to correct a few power asymmetries, imbalances. And the German Constitutional Court in the 1980s found in a groundbreaking census judgment that this is about political agency, it's about being manipulated and also discrimination. So the actual threat scenarios, particularly regarding user profiling, are about manipulating individual behavior. And you know all the cases. Think of the Brexit referendum or the US campaign in 2016. So part of the data economy lead to disadvantages for the for common society, and the law is having a hard time catching up. If we ask about individual rights and how individuals can enforce their rights, we have gaps. There are global companies, corporations that are not really interested in adhering to laws. This is a fairly old quote from 2007, before the GDPR, from a member of parliament for the Green Party. We see a mass violation of laws which is not being punished and so on. But why, in practice, it looks like this. Breaking the law is still worth it. Data protection is a block to business, is a headline. So people don't really care about the consequences. You may have the headline fine every now and then, a few millions perhaps, but still profits massively overweigh the damages through fines. One example, perhaps Facebook, between 2013 and 2018, violated a law in the US They were fined a few billions but made several more billions in profit. Sorry, the interpreter didn't get the numbers. Okay, and you can have public enforcement versus private enforcement of the law. And we've seen in other events here at the camp that private enforcement can be very problematic. We had the talk by Kantorkel about facial recognition. The Hamburg Privacy Commissioner is quite idle. And the other is the so-called retail bidding area, which is the bidding of spaces, ad spaces on websites. If you visit a website by, a German media company, you will see a number of ads, and these ad spaces are being auctioned within milliseconds with the information that this certain end device is accessing this certain website. This information is sent to various actors, hundreds or even thousands of companies, and because this happens on large numbers of website visits, it's very easy as a data broker to become a part of this chain and make up a user profile according to the sites someone visits. So certain human rights organizations such as Digital Courage and the Digital Gesellschaft, Digital Society, led by Johnny Ryan, an activist from Ireland, went to the court on this. But industry standards, the protocols that make all this possible and that still lead the way, are not outlawed by any authority, and this is why, with Johnny Ryan from the Irish Civil Rights Organization, went to the court in Hamburg against the industry association that actually publishes these standards. If you're interested in details, you can look it up. We had a talk at the Netzpolitischer Abend, a regular event at CBase in Berlin, which you can access from the DigiGas website, Digital Society, Digital Gesellschaft website. It will be in German. So where there's this deficit in law enforcement, there is a financial and personal and staff deficit. So more and more complaints are in the loop. And many EU member states, if you complain against the company, it will be in the responsibility of the member state where the company has its headquarters, which is often Ireland. But we have problems with the authorities in Germany in many cases. We know that many authorities, data protection commissions, have asked for more and more staff, but haven't are massively understaffed. So please join that effort and create some pressure for staff numbers to be increased. But often it's the attitude in the authorities too, in the commissions. For example, in Hamburg, the head of the authority has said, well, I am not the person responsible for an Austrian startup, am I? Which was related to a complaint by the Austrian organization, None of Your Business, NOIB, of course. And it is their task precisely to enforce the law of those affected, even if they're in Austria. So you really have to be thankful for having receiving actual data, details about these cases, but they apparently are not. There's another way, though. Not just affected people, but also representatives, organizations can go to the courts, and that is in fact quite effective, especially regarding the fact that these court cases cause companies to set aside funds in their financial reports, and that is a point where actual company heads might be interested and see that there is a real problem. From the political point of view, I would really like the authorities to deal with the law enforcement, which should be their task. But the situation is that in various places, for various reasons, they don't. And the public can therefore get active in a supporting way. So let's see how it goes, how you go through the courts, how you get your law enforced. Our legal system is divided into three areas. There is the civil law, which regulates individuals' conflicts between individuals. So if you want to claim liability against a company, the civil law would be the path to take. Also, companies can go to the courts against violations by their competitors, because you cannot have a competitive advantage through violating the law. And civil rights organizations, industry associations could actually take the civil law action, the civil law route. You would be, if you would go to the administrative court, the other route is if you were the recipient of a legal ruling by a authority that you want to object to, or if you have asked the authority to take action and realize that they're not taking action, you could actually then could get that authority, that Data Protection Commission, to a court, the administrative court, and that's where you would end up also if you were to take action against data protection by a public, by a government authority, a government agency. And the paragraph 42 in the German data protection law actually makes it a criminal offense if you do certain things wrong in data processing. That hasn't been used in many cases, so that would take you through the third route, the criminal courts, and it will be interesting to see if that would be a possible path. Now, you have this slide full of acronyms. Don't be put off by that. It's just the flow diagram that you would apply to you if you were to take action, and you could go all the way to the German Court of Justice, the BGH. But if it was a case from an employee, you would have a different path, and then you have the path you would take in the administrative court system. And there are certain special cases in this diagram as well. And you can see that the European Court of Justice is next to all of these. So all of these various instances could refer a case to the European Court of Justice for a preliminary ruling, because it is the task of the European Court of Justice to oversee the legal practices by various courts at the national level. Okay, now let's look at things you can do as an individual or as an organization in the court, what you could actually achieve. Three of the typical objectives you can see here, that first of all is information, an approach that many of you will know. Article 15 of the GDPR foresees, provides that information has to be given to everyone affected about their own personal data, and you can also obtain copies of your personal data together with certain information about the actual circumstances of the processing of the data. The rights to information is quite helpful. If you want to get information, if you consider going to the courts, you might start by getting this information first. And if there is a delayed or incomplete or information or none at all, that could actually lead to a right for damages. Quite interesting is the problem of asking for a cease and desist situation. So you might ask for a camera to be uninstalled. You might ask for data that is being stored being to be deleted. Or you might ask people to do more, because there is also the obligation to undo certain consequences. We have cases from 2017 that we're showing here. There was a case where a telecommunication provider was in the court because they used personal data and shared them for advertising purposes. The privacy statement talked about data being shared without any details, and the party had to delete data, but also they had to make sure that the partners that they had shared the data with would delete them as well. So they had to ask their partners, sorry, I didn't manage to get appropriate consent. You'll have to delete all the data. So there was a certain loss of reputation as a consequence. Also, there was a case against Tesla, which was the about the Guardian mode or in their cars, which meant that certain Tesla cars were equipped with various cameras which filmed their surroundings and recorded the images and had data about passers-by, cyclists perhaps, which of course was a violation of privacy law. And we kind of went in an indirect way. We didn't attack the data processing directly, but asked Tesla to be prohibited from advertising this illegal data processing. They were advertising this cool feature, was in fact illegal. And in fact, Tesla then received a obliged not to use that anymore and would now receive a fine if they would still do that. And which is also quite interesting is the question of providing evidence and proof in court. There is actually, if you go to the court, you have to prove what you claim as the basis for your legal case. Now, in data protection law, actually, this is reversed, which is particularly enshrined in Article 5 of GDPR. And this kind of is supposed to correct the imbalance of power, because normally, as an affected person, I don't really have any insights in what is happening and how the data processing works. So the responsible person has to prove that their data processing is legal, which the European Court of Justice has supported in a judgment too. But this hasn't quite arrived at all the national courts yet. And it's not a huge problem anyway, because if you have, it's not that hard to prove a violation of the law, which we try to do with all the means accessible. Here, for example, we have the case against the German Railways and their Navigator app, which Julia Witte talked about last night, which in much more detail. And if you can watch that talk if you want the details. That case is conducted by my colleague Peter for Digital Courage, and some extracts from the submission to the court, which is quite well detailed because of the way that Mike Kuketz, a German IT security expert, analyzed the data flows. Thanks to him for that. And so we were trying to quite precisely describe the way data is being processed. We analyzed web traffic, and that helps about every single connection that took place. We would read installation manuals and look at the description of the various tools and try to prove that data is being shared with various other companies for which there is no legal foundation. You can see a few server requests to certain servers that would share data through a database. Through the US database, we were able to show that Adobe is the owner of the domain concerned. And that is quite fun on the one hand, but it's also quite challenging to do because there is the need to be very precise technically, and also you have to keep the person on the benches in the court in mind that is normally not a nerd. So you have to explain these details in a way that is understandable.
It seems obvious to prove the web traffic in the form of HR files and show them this way. This is one example from the legal action that I mentioned before. We could actually prove single actions. We're very thankful all the time for technical support. So far, there was no case where we had an actual formal document drawn up, but it's usually not possible to finance these kinds of official documents by experts. Here, there is one legal action to prove that an IP address was processed in the USA. When there is data sent to the US, there is a parallel law to the DSGVO, which is only legal in the EU. We realized the EU Commission, WS, uses cloud for all their websites, Facebook logins, Google logins, and so on. And we have a client where we went to Luxembourg. And how did we prove that? For those server requests, we get server responses from the server. We got the IP address. You can look into the US. There is a central registry for IP addresses. The companies register their servers. And in the technical documentations, it's quite beautifully shown where the servers are, where the IP addresses are. And you could show it by proof. We will get a verdict at the end of the year, and that will be for all of Europe. So it's really fascinating. It got quite political. And we thought, while we're going there anyway, let's see if we can get damages. And the NSA and the US security laws have opportunities to get to data without a lot of protections. And we wanted to get that case cleared up. You can get this online if you look it up. Omission legal actions against dark patterns. I think everybody knows them. Everybody hates them. We're talking about cookie banners who have a huge OK, agree button on the first page where you can't really manage to disagree and actually use the website disagreeing, or if you have to click through three, four layers to do that. Google, for instance, until the end of last year, used such a cookie banner. The option to agree was on the first page. You could disagree only far behind. And we filed legal action for the Verbraucherzentrale. And Google got the omission. You have to scroll for a while when you're confronted with this banner, but you can do disagree right there. If Google still tracks you anyway is a whole different question. Different example. You see a cookie banner which was the subject of a legal action. We filed that in 2019. Only last year the verdict happened. It was very tiring, a lot of writing back and forth. There was a defense strategy shown at some point. We are using an industry standard, TCIF, Interactive Advertising Bureau. And this is the organization for the advertisement companies online. And they created an industry standard where you can show that a certain agreement is for a certain purpose, for a certain third party, has been agreed to. And in Belgium, there was a legal action which we took on, and there was a great legal action with one expert who was very active there, and it showed that the mechanism to agree, TC string, is a mechanism for tracking itself. So all the technology that has all agreements through this mechanism are themselves unlawful. And in Munich at the OHG, this is how you can show that one of those industry standards that is shown itself is unlawful. So the standard is unlawful. Very fascinating. They changed it, but we are going to keep our eye on that. Moving on. Another goal for legal protection is compensation. You have to differentiate between material and immaterial compensations. Material, it means you have damages that you can put into money because you lost actual money, you had to pay something. On the other hand, immaterial damages happen if you had a very strong psychological harm, if you were surveyed, were pressured, you had to worry about an identity theft. You had to control different portals all the time for this theft. And it's like that. Immaterial damages in the German law traditionally hasn't been put with high numbers so far. If life and limb is hurt, or if the personality is hurt severely, or even if you've lost the joy of your vacation, that was more important. The most important point here is the GDPR. It says that even immaterial damages due to violations of the GDPR are to be compensated. You're seeing a few numbers here. There is a huge number of legal verdicts about that with quite different results. But here you see some sort of a scale where the numbers are. In one case, we filed legal action. There was a data leak. A lot of customer data was lost. They were quite sensitive financial information, and customers of this company could not access their depots, which is quite stressful for them. Here, the decision was that for that, compensation for immaterial damages is to be paid, which was 200,000 euros. A case with totally different direction is a case we did together with the Club for Freedom Rights. It's about proctoring. Proctoring means the electronic surveillance of Fernprüfungen, exams. School exams. This was important because of the pandemic, and it's going to stay important. Those digital measurements are going to become more important and have stayed on long after the pandemic. In this case, the tool used facial recognition, which was clearly unlawful. There was no legal basis for that. And the case was data went to AWS, who did this facial recognition for the university, and our client has received considerable damages because she had huge psychological stress because of that and great worries, loss of control, what is happening with her data or what AWS might do with it. There is a small in-between summary here. What are the challenges at going to court with compensations? On one hand, this is new legal matter. GDPR is only 5 years old. On the other hand, the facts are such that society doesn't know much about this, so experts are called for. Some laws have special staff for that. We think this is needed everywhere, because if those special expert councils don't exist. Judges are in a situation where they do something completely different in the morning, and in the afternoon they need to deal with data protection, where they need to be very deep into the technical details, whom they know nothing about up until this point in many cases. Partially, there is the non-understanding that I personally don't understand very well. Here are some quotes that you sometimes see. Hey, the sued party doesn't have to go to this website, or they can change their browser settings. This is a switching of the responsibilities. Like, you got hit, you could have worn a helmet. I think in this case, law doesn't have to bow down to unlawful action. Also, partially, which is a challenge, what you need to file, for instance, for omissions, it has to be very precise or else it's too vague. But on the other hand, it has to be formulated in a way that the sued party can't just change a few detail and then get out of this lawsuit and just change their tactics. So keeping it technically neutral. At the compensation lawsuits, you saw the numbers aren't all that high in the individual cases. On the other hand, in many cases, there is a large number of affected actors. So in sum, the final sum for compensation can be quite high. We brought you an example what lawyers are paid for 100 euro of compensations as a lawyer. And you see, this is not really making money either for the people doing the legal action or for us as lawyers, because there's dozens of work hours invested. This is not really a good way to go. There are new opportunities for collective legal protection, and they can actually help.
So the diagnosis of a dispersed damage. So we have violations that affect a huge amount of people, but no one gets to the courts. We have no law enforcement through the authorities because they are overwhelmed, over capacity, and they're not really staffed sufficiently. And that applies throughout the country. And the European legislator in 2022 introduced a right for organizations to go to the courts. So you can have the option that actually organizations can claim for damages in class action kind of cases, which is fairly new. And it's not that anyone at all can do it. It has to be certain qualified organizations. They have to register with the Justice Ministry and have to prove that they're not actually trying to aim for profit. And the GDPR, after a long dispute, and the e-privacy directive has been accepted as consumer laws that apply, fall under this rule. So this is an EU rule that has to be transposed into national law, and the member states can then opt-ins and opt-outs. Opt-outs meaning what happens in the Netherlands and Portugal has been happening for a long time. If you, as an organization, go to the court and want damage for the whole class of people for, say, 100 euro, that actually multiplies by the number of people, so that leads you to very high numbers. We have Salesforce and retail bidding where the damage, where the actual value of the case was assessed at 8 billion. That was a huge problem for the company, of course. But a member state can also include an opt-in, which means that you can then send out a press release and have 2 months' time to actually ask people to join the case. And you can see that the deadline for transposing the law has actually expired in last December, but only this July the German Parliament, Bundestag, has passed the law. It has to go through the second chamber still. We already know that we will have an opt-in, so we cannot actually go to the courts as an organization in Germany affecting the whole class of people. They have to opt in. There is a certain risk, of course, by going through the courts of financial risk, but there are rules for that, trying to prevent the case to be made just for earning money. And quite in parallel, the European Court of Justice on the 4th of May had a fundamental judgment for immaterial damages, and this actually takes into account this kind of dispersion of damages. It's quite a turning of a tide. We have more than 250 decisions on damages now, mostly on immaterial damage, and they were all rejected because the notion was that the damage is not really relevant, it's just a cookie, there is no real damage to be seen. So we have an unwritten situation. The Austrian Post Office had an interesting case against them. They are supposed to simply deliver letters, but what do they do, the German Post as well? They look at these addresses and try to form data from that about target groups, and then trade these addresses. They try to assign political affinities to certain addresses. Someone was actually assigned or claimed to be a supporter of the far-right FPÖ in Austria, FPÖ. And even in Austria, the case was that the second level instance said, no, this isn't really relevant as a damage. It's not that bad if you're wrongly categorized. Okay, then the European Court of Justice went in. The kind of guardian of the European Constitution, they said there were three questions put to the European Court in that Court of Justice in that case, and they said that the actual violation of a GDPR rule is not enough because the violation has to be causal for a certain damage. But that is quite clear if you look at tracking and such. Second, the question was to be answered, can the member states then develop criteria to measure the damage? Yes, but please keep the principle of equivalence and effectivity in mind, so the level of protection cannot be decreased, to summarize it. And thirdly, the third question, there is no relevance threshold. Every single damage can be brought to the court. There doesn't have to be a minimum damage level. That's a good sign, because these class actions for damages that really can have an effect will be made easier this way. And this, together with the Consumer Right Directive, gives us hope for the future that at least the large corporations that conduct calculated violations of the law, as we've seen, and simply try to sit out the situation, now they have something to put against them. And I can only say every NGO should consider if they could not become a qualified organization for launching these class actions. It doesn't have to be an industry, legal case industry. There are some organizations that do this very professionally. There's a $6 billion case against TikTok currently ongoing that will hurt. And this is ongoing. And we can actually learn something from the US in terms of law enforcement this way. That's my position. We have a bit of time left. Are there any questions? And we'll be happy to answer them.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thank you, Elisabeth and Tillmann, for this talk. Other questions? Yeah, there is one. Thanks for this talk. You were talking about the change of who needs to offer the proof in the GDPR laws. Is that also a matter of cost for the experts? Does the side who gets sued need to pay advances for those experts just to prove that they're not wrong? Good question. Not necessarily. It'll be shown during the lawsuit and that nothing can be proved. And only if something is not shown, then an expert is called. We actually did this with forensic Gutachten, and we had somebody who could pay for it, and we did this. It is possible to do this, even as the defense, to get a private expert and show that that you're not wrong, but it's not a duty. If an appraise is coming, then it depends on the way a certain case is going. It's not predictable. But unfortunately, you cannot demand it. Other questions? Thanks a lot as well. And I wanted to ask, this opt-in thing that is supposed to also be legal in Germany, how does that work? People are checked and sought after that they need to agree to this lawsuit? No, this is one single lawsuit. It's better because not 10,000 people file a suit, but one association does the suit for 10,000 people. And all the people who want to join needs to associate themselves with this lawsuit within a week.
Eight weeks.
There are 15,000 people needed. That's quite quick, but you need to strategically think how to get those people together. Other questions? Oh, microphone is not working. Also from my side, thanks a lot for this talk and your great work. You were talking about that the situation at the legal authorities is that there isn't enough people and not enough willingness or possibilities. They are all overworked against lawsuits, to go against lawsuits. I would like to add there are two more problems at the base of this. Once, within the legal authorities, there aren't enough technical people, not enough technical expertise. The technical people are not paid enough, and the because the standard they're paid with is too low, and we can't get the experts we need at the level we need with this little payment. Data protection is a complex area. It needs a lot of work to get into it. And the second problem is the political the people at the political places who are responsible that the lawsuits are actually enforced. Those data protection officials are elected for a certain time. They're political officials. They want to get reelected. And unfortunately, in the private sector, they are going against companies in their specific jurisdiction. And they have the interest that large companies are still doing business in their region. You can see that in Ireland. You don't really want to go that hard against them. And that creates quite a difficult situation for the data protection officials. You want people there who are quite nice to the companies. And on the other hand, yeah, actually, you would have to protect the GDPR because that calls for expertise in an article. And they try to kind of wiggle around that. And that's why there are people who don't know much about GDPR or not enough, and they would need a lot of work to get into it. I don't want to insinuate that they don't want that, but it would be very, very important that this myth of they're just overworked and there aren't enough experts, this myth has to be broken. There needs to be a policy that those people are hired in a way how it's necessary that they have enough expertise. I would like to publicize this fact and broadcast that because this is important to transport that information, that there needs to be pressure from the people to get this done. Yeah, this is a very important add-on. The myth of overwork, I would disagree with that, but I agree that this isn't the only point. It's actually a system error, you could think, but we also sue the legal authorities for not doing anything. Okay. I see back there's another question. At those opt-out cases, the people don't just call in. How do they get their money? And if you can't find enough people, I hope the companies pay anyway, no? Those are usually associations, NGOs who do that. They can disagree. They need to be contacted and informed that they are potentially affected, and then they can say, I don't want that you go to court for me. That's the option to disagree, to opt out. How they get all the different addresses, I don't know. We would have to ask the colleagues. It depends on the case. There's probably a detailed regulation for that. It was possible with Oracle and Salesforce. Due to this collective lawsuit, they deactivated a certain feature, and 7 million pieces of data were no further processed. I don't know how they identified the different people, but they made it. Do we have more questions? It doesn't look like it. Then a large applause for our speakers. And we'll be signing off.